This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This evening on Well, 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 I'm joined by my colleague Rachel Cook. Welcome back, Rachel. How are you going there?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
It's just always great to have you across the table from me in the studio, looking into your eyes and talking about really important women's health stuff.
Well, it's what we do best, isn't it?
It is. We're very good at talking. We have a really special guest on the show this evening, Rachel. Do you want to tell me who that is?
Yes, well, we're very lucky to be joined by the fabulous Judy Slate from the Cancer Council Victoria.
Hello, Judy.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Tonight, we're going to be discussing cervical cancer screening within the LGBTIQ community. Judy's the expert on that subject, so we'll be talking a bit more to her about that. This seems to be somewhat uncharted territory within the LGBTIQ community, Rachel.
Yes, especially in Victoria. So this is a great campaign that we feel very fortunate to be partnering with CCV on. It's obviously because of the research, which we'll go into more later on in the show. It's a really important campaign to be doing.
I've heard a little bit from the LGBTIQ Women's Health Conference that Thorn Harbour and ACON put on there just last month with regards to this stuff, and it's being researched some more, but it's still very, very new, and we can't wait to hear more about that and what the options are and who's important in this new campaign as well. So we're really pleased to be collaborating with Cancer Council Victoria, and we will be back shortly after a song to talk to Judy Slate. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I am joined in the studio by my colleague and friend Rachel Cook and Judy Slate from Cancer Council Victoria. Welcome, Judy.
Hi.
So great to have you on the show. Can you please give us a bit of a rundown about what your role is at Cancer Council Victoria?
So I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator in our Screening Early Detection Immunisation team at Cancer Council Victoria. We work really closely with a variety of communities to increase participation in our bowel, breast and cervical cancer screening programs. We basically work with people who are less likely to screen for cancer and therefore may be at a greater risk of cancer.
Right.
So can you tell us, Judy, how common is cervical cancer?
Yeah, so cervical cancer is serious. There's approximately 200 new cases of cervical cancer diagnosed in Victoria a year. And of that, between 50 and 60 people will die of cervical cancer a year. So it is serious, but the good news is that many cases of cervical cancer can be prevented. Regular cervical screening can help people prevent dying of cervical cancer, and it also prevents around 1,200 people developing cervical cancer. Since the National Cervical Cancer Program began, which was in 1991, it's actually managed to halve the rate of people getting and dying from cervical cancer.
Wow. So who needs cervical screening?
Yeah, and that's the big question of the moment. Mm. Everyone with a cervix aged between 25 and 74 needs regular cervical screening, which is every 5 years now. So, which I'll get into later.
Yeah, okay. So it's some interesting information anyway, because for a lot of people within our community, they may not identify as a woman but still have a cervix, and it's getting that message out there to those people.
Mm. And I guess that's, you know, so can we go into that then? So tell us why it's important that we get this message out to the LGBTIQ community.
Yeah, listen, there's definitely been a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding around who needs cervical screening. Historically, many people in the LGBTI community either thought they didn't need cervical screening or they were even told by health professionals that they didn't need cervical screening. And as a result, the LGBTI community is underscreened for cervical cancer.
Yeah, I mean, my experience has been on many occasions with GPs that they're like, no, you don't need smears, you don't need screens, you don't need any of that. My auntie's a nurse and she told me that I wouldn't need them as well. So, I mean, like, it's more common than it isn't, I think.
Because you had said that you
because
had sex with women.
With women, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I know that in some of the formative research that we did, In some regional communities, there was a number of women that we spoke to who said that they had been had outed themselves to their doctor and said that they primarily or only had sex with women, and they were told that they didn't have to have any screening. So I guess it's about sort of busting some of those myths as well.
Yeah, really concerning to hear that. You know, our main message is that everyone with a cervix who's had sex ever with anyone needs cervical screening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are the screening rates like within the community? You sort of touched on that already, but...
Yeah, so we know that the rates are lower than the mainstream population. We don't have exact statistics around that, but, you know, we're hoping to change that.
Yeah, great.
So can you tell us what a cervical screening test involves?
Yeah, so it's really quick and easy. The doctor, so you'll need to make an appointment at your doctor or your GP, and they will use an instrument called a speculum to take a sample from your cervix. It sounds sort of uncomfortable, but it's, you know, truly not that bad. And it's, you know, really worth it for the peace of mind.
And so does this screening, is that the same as a pap smear or is that different from a pap smear?
So it's a new program. People might be more familiar with the pap smear or the pap test. The cervical screening test was introduced in December last year, and while it replaces the pap smear or the pap test, for the person getting the cervical screen, it's actually the same experience as having a pap smear, so it's still a speculum.
Okay. It sounds less intense, though. I was like, oh, do they just, like, x-ray, you know? Or because I had heard it had changed, but I didn't realize the process was pretty much still the same.
Yeah, it's still, and that was definitely... miscommunicated a little bit, so it's good to clear that up.
Yeah, and also just there's something about the word smear. It's just, you know, it reminds me of when you're at a restaurant and they make the plate look real fancy by smearing sauce on the side of it. I don't know, it's just not a cute word.
Yeah, and it's just not the same thing at all.
No.
An unnecessary visual, I guess.
I am joined tonight in the studios by my colleague Rachel Cook and Judy Slape from Cancer Council Victoria. Hi, dolls.
Hi, there.
Yeah, that's really catchy. And I like how you force us to say hi, dolls, now.
Yeah.
I've really resisted that in the office for a long time.
Even Dylan Joel from Joy here says hi, dolls, on the radio all the time. I hear him. I know it's for me. So we're talking tonight about cervical screening within the LGBTIQ community. Rachel, over to you.
I guess one of the questions that... we don't know, but it's funny, isn't it? We go in for these tests and we often don't even know what we're having these tests for. We know sort of the outcomes, but not really the details. So I guess, can you tell us, you know, what does the screening test actually look for?
So the screening test looks for something called HPV, human papilloma virus. HPV is a sexually transmitted infection that's spread through genital skin-to-skin contact. In most cases, your body's immune system will actually clear HPV from your body within about 6 to 12 months, and it requires no action. But sometimes that doesn't happen, and there can be long-term or persistent HPV infections that can cause abnormal cells to develop on the cervix. Over a really long time, we're talking like 10 years, those abnormal cells may develop into cervical cancer.
Well, I didn't know the, what would you call it, incubation period, perhaps? Is it, I don't know,
yeah.
But what goes on for that long?
Cervical cancer is really slow to develop. So it takes about 10 to 15 years to develop, which is why cervical screening is so effective, because we're getting right in there before any real damage can occur.
And I think one of the other interesting points that you made then was skin-to-skin genital contact, not necessarily penis-vagina.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's anyone who's ever had sex ever requires regular cervical screening.
It's just easier to put it that way, isn't it? Rather than getting too technical like Rachel over here.
Just making the point that it's not just heterosexual sex.
Yes, exactly.
For sure. So does it cost anything to get a cervical screen done?
The test itself doesn't cost anything, but it's important to remember that your doctor may charge a consultation fee. Lots of doctors and GPs do bulk bill, so that's worthwhile to ask when you call and make a booking.
Mm. And so besides this screening test, are there any other screening options available?
Yeah, so with the rollout of the new National Cervical Screening Program, self there is an option called self-collection. Self-collection is available for some people who have been unable to screen in the past. Self-collection means that people with a cervix will be able to collect a HPV sample themselves at their healthcare provider's practice. It has the potential to improve access for LGBTIQ people with a cervix in the future, you know, particularly for those who may find it too traumatic to go through, or those who have experienced transphobia, for example, from their healthcare providers, or just generally haven't had good experiences, although there is quite a fair bit of eligibility criteria around that.
Mm. I heard recently that everyone's got HPV. Is that a myth?
Well, pretty much. Mm. So everyone who's ever had sex in their lifetime will probably come into contact with HPV. 4 out of 5 people will have HPV. But the thing about HPV is it doesn't, in many cases, doesn't cause symptoms. You won't feel sick, and it doesn't really do anything, and it can clear the body itself. There's just some types of HPV that can lead to things like cervical cancer.
So if you've been for a screening, they would let you know if you had that knocking about.
It depends what type of HPV. Mm. They might say, you know, you have a really low risk HPV and therefore come back in 12 months and we'll screen you again and it'll probably be gone by then.
There you go.
Just one of the points then you made with self-collection, you said some people who might not have been able to have screenings in the past. What might be some of the reasons that people wouldn't have been able to have screenings?
Yeah, so there's a variety of reasons why people might not have participated in cervical screening before. This list certainly isn't exhaustive, but some reasons might be people that have experienced homophobia, biphobia or transphobia from their GP or their doctor, maybe, you know, really adverse to going and having a screen. People that have undergone female genital cutting, that might be a barrier. What else? Yeah, there's sort of a variety of reasons why it might not have been possible for someone.
A trauma.
Trauma as well. Mm. Someone who's experienced sexual assault.
Yeah. Yeah, great. So why isn't everyone eligible for self-collection, Judy?
So there's some criteria around self-collection. People need to be over the age of 30. They need to have either never screened for cervical cancer, or they need to be what we consider underscreened, which means that they're 2 years overdue for their next screening. It needs to occur at the healthcare provider's practice as well. And also, it's really important to note that if the self-collection test comes back that there's HPV present, the next step is actually a speculum examination. So that might not be suitable for everyone, and that's something to discuss with your healthcare provider when you're discussing your options around self-collection or speculum exam.
So, hi everyone. We talked a little bit earlier about HPV. Can you please give us a quick rundown of what HPV stands for, what that means, and so on?
Yeah, definitely. So HPV stands for human papilloma virus. As you were saying before, it's a really common sexually transmitted infection. In fact, it's often referred to as sort of the common cold of sexual activity. Up to 4 out of 5 people will have HPV at some point in their life if they've ever had sex with anyone. There's a lot of different types of HPV. Some are categorized as low risk or high risk. Low risk HPV types cause things like genital warts, which don't cause cancer, while high risk HPV types can cause serious illness, including cancer. Cervical cancer is the most common cancer caused by HPV, but HPV can also cause less common cancers, such as anal, vulva, vaginal, mouth, throat, and penile cancers.
So hold up. You can get genital warts from HPV.
Yeah, so that's what causes genital warts.
Shit. Mm. So I was going to ask, are there any symptoms from HPV? But there could be symptoms from things that are symptoms of HPV.
Yeah, so in many cases, HPV won't cause any symptoms, but in some cases it can. There's a lot of different types of HPV.
Okay.
So can I ask then, so what if you've got the lesser kind of the less the threatening, risk. The lower risk HPV, what would be some of the treatments that you'd have, if any?
Not really any. If you're having cervical screening, regular cervical screening, it might come up that you have a low risk HPV and they'll just screen you again in 12 months.
Right, okay.
And it might be gone from your system or it might still be there. But aside from that, there's not a HPV screening test. It's for outside of the cervical screening program.
Yeah. We touched on this briefly earlier, but how is HPV transmitted between LBQ women?
Yeah, so it's passed on by intimate genital skin-to-skin contact. So it's not passed on by semen, blood or saliva.
That's definitely some new information for me.
I guess there's also the tricky area sometimes in a long-term relationship. If someone presents with an STI, there can be some questions about how that person got that STI if the other partner doesn't have it. So can we sort of talk about how that might present itself with HPV?
Yeah, so you can have HPV for a really long time without knowing it. Finding out you have HPV certainly doesn't mean that you or your partner have been unfaithful. So that's why everyone with a cervix needs to be tested, no matter who you've had as a sexual partner or how long ago.
So, Judy, how can we stop the spread of HPV?
Vaccination and regular cervical screening is definitely your best protection.
And you mentioned something when we were off air about being able to get vaccinated at school.
The HPV vaccine is currently given to 12 and 13-year-olds or year 7s at school. That's a free program from the government. People under the age of 19, though, who might have missed out on the vaccination in school are eligible for a free catch-up. So that's a great thing to speak to your doctor about to make an appointment. And while the HPV vaccine is more beneficial if given before sexual activity begins, so before any exposure to HPV, it is still there's still benefits to receiving the vaccination after sexual activity. So again, just something to speak to the health professional about.
Cool.
So do you need cervical screening if you've had the HPV vaccination?
Yeah, you sure do. You need cervical screening even if you've had the HPV vaccine, and that's because the vaccine doesn't protect against every type of HPV.
So if I was to go to my GP now and say, I want a vaccination for HPV, as a 33-year-old woman, would they tell me where to go?
I don't think that they would be offering HPV vaccine, but something to talk about with the doctor.
Yeah, cool. So most kids in high school will have been given that?
Yeah, I think the first year that it started was 2005 or 2006, so kids after that.
Regardless of gender, everyone gets it?
Regardless of gender, everyone gets it.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so can you tell us a bit more about the HPV vaccination?
The HPV vaccine protects against the HPV types that cause around 90% of cervical cancers, as well as 90% of other HPV-related cancers. So it's a really great vaccine. It also provides some protection against some of the less common cancers, including vaginal and vulva cancers, penile cancer and anal cancer. And it also protects against 90% of genital warts.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm joined in the studio this evening with Judy Sleap from Cancer Council Victoria and Rachel Cook from Thorn Harbour Health. And we've been talking about cervical screening. Welcome back, dolls.
Hi there.
So, Judy, can we talk about some of the myths surrounding cervical cancer for the LGBTI women's community and also TGD folk as well?
Yeah, so the biggest myth is that many people don't realise that everyone with a cervix needs screening between the ages of 25 and 74, no matter who you've had as a sexual partner.
Just to confirm, TGD is trans and gender diverse for anyone who isn't across every single acronym within our community right now. So, Judy, what are your tips for LGBTIQ people to make sure that they have a good experience when cervical screening?
LGBTIQ people between the age of 25 and 74 with a cervix need cervical screening. So when you have your cervical screening appointment, there's things that you might be asked which might make it uncomfortable and things that you might want to consider how you'll answer before you go. Are you sexually active and what form of contraception are you using are things that are often asked by health professionals. These questions and assumptions can be really uncomfortable, so it's a good idea to think about how you'd like to respond beforehand.
That's a really good tip and something that I hadn't even considered.
And I guess as we were discussing before in terms of, finding the right health professional for you to have these tests that that can be, I guess, when you were talking before earlier about people who've had traumatic experiences with GPs. Mm. I guess at Thorn Harbour Health, we're all very aware of that. And for our TGD community, we do have Equinox and Fitzroy, which I'm sure most people are familiar with, where you can, if you're a TGD person with a cervix, you can go and have a screening there.
Yeah, and in a lot of people's experience, their regular GP might not understand their needs as well. And so it's also probably good to have a chat to your friends within the community and see if they've found a health professional that they feel comfortable with who understands their needs. And
I guess, you know, we do have, you know, the clinics that we know of on the south side, Sydney Clinic, and on the north side, North Side Clinic. I do know that there are waiting periods at the moment, but I guess as this test is something that you could potentially book in for and then go, you know, a month later. I think the waiting period's roughly around a month for those clinics.
Well, Centre Clinic and Northside Clinic are both bulk billed, yes?
Yes.
Yes. And if you don't have time to wait, Paran Market Clinic's very good for the LGBTIQ community. You just have to pay a little bit of money there.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess that is a huge part of what could come out of this campaign is finding a list or finding some safe places that people can go and feel welcome to go where the health professionals understand their needs. So if we were in some kind of screening role play, what could someone expect the experience to be like on the day, Judy?
So on the day that you make your appointment or that you go for the appointment, it might be a little awkward to begin, but basically you'll go into the doctor's room and you have to remove your underwear, and the doctor will use a speculum to take a sample from your cervix. It shouldn't take too long and, you know, it shouldn't be painful. It is uncomfortable and it might be a little bit painful. If it was, for whatever reason, really painful or traumatic, you're entitled to stop the screening procedure at any time. Just tell your health professional that you want to stop and you can reschedule it at another time.
So what do I do in a situation where, because of my sexuality or gender, I might feel like I'm being discriminated against during my screening?
Health professionals are encouraged to take a sensitive approach when asking about your sexual history and performing pelvic examinations. Although occasionally a person may have a bad experience when they're having a cervical screening test, if it happens to you, again, remember that you can stop the test at any point. It's unlawful to discriminate against someone based on their sexual orientation, gender identity, or lawful sexual activity. So if you feel as though you've been discriminated against or you've been sexually harassed, victimized, or vilified, you or someone on your behalf can make a complaint to the Human Rights Commission. If you've had a bad experience, though, and you don't actually want to make a complaint, really important to talk it over with your friends or with someone who can offer you support. You can speak to Cancer Council, our number's 13 11 20, or I'm sure that you can call Thorn Harbour Health as well.
Yeah, we have some free counselling services for the community as well there. Just another quick question on that. Whenever you're going for a screening, how much personal information do you have to disclose?
The choice to disclose information about your sexuality and gender identity is completely yours. However, sometimes disclosing personal information may lead to a better experience because the doctor or nurse will be able to tailor your care based on how you identify. If you do choose to disclose, let your health professional know whether or not you want it on your record, as other health professionals might have access to that record. However, health professionals are required by law to protect your confidentiality and maintain your privacy.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point that you made then about that you can stop the test at any time you wish. And I think that, you know, if you're going into one of these tests and you are feeling particularly nervous, that just knowing that, you know, if you are too uncomfortable at any point, you can stop the test is a great thing to sort of have in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and there's also practical tips around making the test less traumatic. You know, if you don't want the doctor or the GP to stand right at the edge of the bed, it might be more comfortable for someone to have that GP or doctor stand on the side.
Okay.
You can also insert the speculum yourself, which might be less confronting for someone as well. So there's ways to sort of make it a more comfortable experience.
Yeah, knowing your boundaries and enforcing them.
Yeah, they're great tips. Yeah.
Happy Thursday evening, everyone. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy. I'm joined by my colleague, Rachel Cook, who is the project lead for the Women's Health Campaign, and Judy Sleep from Cancer Council Victoria.
So we've talked a lot about cervical screening for the LGBTIQ community. What other screening tests do we need to be aware of?
In Australia, we're really lucky that we also have the bowel and breast cancer screening program. So bowel and breast screening is available for people aged 50 to 74. The bowel screening program is a home kit that's sent to people when they turn 50 every 2 years. And breast screen is something that you can do through Breast Screen Victoria. And that's, again, a screening test every 2 years.
So just on those screenings, now you said that we are seeing that people are underrepresented in those screenings as well. Is that just for the LGBTI community or for the broader community as well?
For bowel screening, everyone is pretty much underscreened. So that's something that we're working on at the moment. Cancer Council Victoria are doing a bowel campaign at the moment to try and include or encourage everyone to participate in bowel screening. For breast screening, I don't actually have the statistics around that, but what we do know is that priority communities are traditionally underscreened. So that includes the LGBTIQ community, people with disabilities, people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders.
It's quite frustrating, isn't it? Because we've known for a long time that screenings and these tests just go such a long way, and if you do have any cancer issues, if you're obviously addressing those issues but in the early stages, there can be some great outcomes. And so it must be, I don't know, is the word frustrating or concerning for Cancer Council that people aren't taking up these screenings as much as you'd like them to be?
I wouldn't say it's frustrating. I would say that we just want to be working to increasing access and participation in these cancer screening programs by trying to get the message out.
So I'm really paranoid now, and I just want to reiterate, what age do you need to be to get these screenings?
Great question. Cervical screening is age 25 to 74, and bowel and breast are 50 to 74, and they're every 2 years, whereas the cervical screening program, it's now every 5 years, but your next cervical screen is due 2 years after your last pap test, and after that you then move on to the 5-yearly schedule.
That's good news.
But having said that, if you do have any concerns around bowel or breast cancer, you can go and get screened, obviously, before 50.
So for breast screen, you can access Breast Screen Victoria from the age of 40, which is great, and that's all free. The bowel screening program is only for people over the age of 50 to get that home test kit. But if you're worried or you have a really strong family history, that's definitely something to go and talk to your doctor or your health professional about, because they'll be able to suggest some options for you.
Okay, great.
And so for anyone that's under the age of 50 with breast screen stuff, are we still encouraging people to do self-checks from any age?
Yeah, definitely. Self-examination is important and really good, and that's something that we encourage. You know your body best, so it's important to look out for changes and talk to your health professional.
I actually have a couple of friends who went through breast cancer and whose girlfriends actually found the lump.
Yeah, really common, I think, is for partners to find the lump. It's also not just a lump that might be a sign. Things like changes in the skin around the breast, or pain around the breast, discharge from the nipple becoming inverted if it wasn't previously inverted, all things to definitely go and chat to a health professional about.
Wow, I didn't realise that. And also just an excuse to get someone to feel your boobs every now and then.
you had to go there, didn't you?
Sure did. We have been talking about the importance of cervical screening for the LGBTIQ community.
One of the things that I have found amazing with this hour is that the amount of information that we've been told from Judy, and just how many things that I didn't know myself, and you sort of think that that you're across most of it, but then there's so much information that we need to get out there, and especially with going into bowel and breast cancer as well, and all of the tips that you talked about, ways that we can make ourselves feel more comfortable going into these screening tests, and just some of the things that we should know. So, just thanks for coming along. I think it's been quite incredible.
Yeah. So I guess we can have a bit of a recap now as the show finishes up on what we have discussed. I guess the key point here is who needs a cervical screening? And Judy, you can talk quickly again on that.
Yeah, so everyone with a cervix needs cervical screening between the age of 25 and 74 every 5 years.
Cool. And that's inclusive of trans men and non-binary folk who have cervixes?
Yes.
And did you say every 5 years?
Every 5 years.
Every 5 years.
And I guess we also want to reassure you that the pap smear experience that many of you may have had in the past isn't what cervical screening is now.
Yeah, so there is safe and inclusive cervical screening tests available for everyone with a cervix.
And I would like to say that I've had some really good experiences using Melbourne Sexual Health Centre as well, and they have a drop-in service that you can just walk in. You don't have to make an appointment, or you can make appointments on Thursday evenings, I think it is. So it's also bulk billed.
And something that I've heard is that people who might be feeling a bit nervous about going in for a screening are either going along with a friend or even a group of friends now. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, definitely. Whatever makes someone feel more comfortable. You can go as a group, make a booking all together and go out for lunch afterwards. You can, even take someone into the room with you. If you want to take a friend or a support person into the room with you to hold your hand or just be there, that's definitely something that you're able to do as well to make you feel more comfortable.
That's a really lovely note to end on, I feel. Make a party out of it. It's what I do for a living. Just make it into a party. Let's go have a cervical screening party. I'll make a Facebook event and invite you all. Cool. Well, it's been so good having you on the show here tonight, Judy. Thank you for coming along. And we look forward to having you on the show again.
Thanks so much. It's been really fun.
Cool. And thank you, Rachel, again. You always come in and provide a really great women's perspective from Thorn Harbour Health, and it's always good to have you on the show too.
It was a pleasure being here.
Oh, thanks, dolls. Well, we will be back next Thursday. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.